Automation systems are sometimes designed around conveyors and why that is completely backwards.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the A3, the Robot Industry Podcast. I'd like to welcome the listeners all over the world from Frankfurt, Marseille, Oakland, and London. Thank you for subscribing to our podcast. I'm glad that you're here. I'd like to introduce my guest today, and that's Kevin Mauger. And Kevin is an entrepreneur. He's a father. He's a fisherman. He's a graduate from the University of Delaware with a Bachelor of Science. And Kevin was a systems engineer at NCC for a dozen years. And like they say in the commercial, you like the company so much that you bought it. Kevin, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. And it's good to be here, Jim. I have to say something. So the systems engineers in our company would probably roll over in their grave thinking about me being a systems engineer. I was a sales engineer, right? So the sales engineers get it close, right? The system engineers make it work.
Coming from an old applications engineer in my background too, I'm sure there's a lot of people rolling their eyes out there right now too. So sure. Kevin, you're president of a bunch of different companies. You started at NCC Automated Systems. You've also got a couple other things going on in your life. Just let our audience know what some of those are.
Well, it's a life full of lots of things. First and foremost, I'm a parent and a husband. Yeah, I have three kids, my son, Kyle, 29, my daughter, Madison, 25, in about 2 weeks, and Kelsey is 19. My wife, Danielle, who is a fitness instructor, nutritionist, and health coach, so she keeps me hopping. And then, of course, the elephant of NCC, right? So NCC, I've worked here my entire career. I literally graduated on a Friday and started at what was then Northeast Conveyor Corporation the following Monday. So I had the weekend off, right? And it's literally the only thing I know. I've been working here my entire career. NCC as a base company is a manufacturer and an integrator in two main industries. The largest industry for us is the food industry, food and packaging. And we also do quite a bit of work in the ophthalmic industry. So two distinct segments. And from that base of NCC, we've started some other companies. And Glideline is one of them. SciDrive Conveyor Company is another one. And we have another one starting to be announced mid this year.
And so you founded Glideline, and that's one of the reasons I'm having you on the podcast today, as one of the most flexible workpiece pallet and panel handling precision conveyor systems on the planet. And so how did that come about?
Yeah, good question, Jim. So again, the background with NCC as an integrator, we buy, resell, customize, and make our own custom conveyor essentially to support customers' needs. And, you know, they're all different all the time. Very rarely is it an out-of-the-box catalog solution. There's always some element of customization. It's the role of an integrator. Everybody knows that. And we weren't in the assembly market at all. However, we had one machine that we built for the optical market, and it used a twin-strand style of conveyor. It didn't even use a workpiece pallet. It's just a twin-strand style of conveyor. And, you know, frankly, we had trouble getting it, right? And as an integrator, the conveyor is a commodity, right? It's basically just something you need. And, you know, we were seeing lead times from who we were purchasing that from that were, you know, just crazy. I mean, 12 weeks on like a 6-foot conveyor. So we designed our own, not with the intention of turning this into a product line. And by the way, it looked nothing like what our product looks like today. It was just, oh my God, we can't get delivery. We've quoted and accepted an order on this delivery, and we need the conveyor before it. So I guess we'll just make our own, right? So we did that. As a complete coincidence, we had another customer walking through our shop, going to an FAT, and he stopped at this machine that had this conveyor inside of it. And he said, hey, where did you get that conveyor? We said, well, we kind of told him the story. Turns out he buys from the same supplier. He's having the same problems. If I buy 120 of these a year, just like that, can you make them for me? So, sure. Okay. So we ramped up a little bit on it. Still really didn't have any intentions, but once we learned about that market, you know, as an integrator, we know what the market wants, right? They want conveyors quickly. They want them at good value. They want them flexible. They want somebody who's easy to work with. And frankly, that segment of the overall automation industry, the main supplier wasn't necessarily those things. There are many, many great things. It's a good company, but they're a very big company and they weren't fast, flexible, or easy, right? So we literally designed our company around fast, flexible, and easy. Our heritage as an integrator told us we knew what they wanted, and we started learning the industry, and we said, you know what, this is an interesting industry. We've got some baseline technology that would really work. We've got the right experience, skill set, manufacturing floor, et cetera, and the industry can really need this. So it was self-serving at first, and then we said, you know what, we could probably make a business out of this, and there we are.
And here I have to disclose to the audience too that we are friends and that in the early days I helped you out with some projects. So I just want to get that out on the table right away.
Well, Jim, I think you could probably say that for most of the industry, at least the friends part. And anybody listening knows that's true.
Well, and I know that you're a fisherman because we actually exchange fish pictures every once in a while over Instagram, right? So Glideline kind of started as your own internal need, and then with clients now asking for the conveyors, you started building configurations and based on this fast, flexible, and easy. So what's happening, and who's your target audience?
We sell to integrators. We don't do any integration in the assembly automation industry. So our targets are integrators in the assembly automation industry, which of course is a horizontal over many verticals. And most of the time, that is a private firm doing work for their end user. It's probably 90% of our customers, but some end users actually have their own integration groups, and we will sell to them on those occasions as well.
And so what were some of your biggest obstacles getting started? I mean, for yourself, it's easy, right? You can be a little bit late, or you can have some challenges, but what were some of your startup obstacles?
Yeah, you raise a really good point. Supplying to ourselves was a really, really good soft start into the industry because you're right, we have more flexibility. And we ended up finding a use for it internally that ended up being quite a bit of use in the optical industry. So we got a lot of volume and a lot of learning as we built our brand. But to answer your question, the hardest thing was building the brand. You know, who is Glideline? Right. And these engineers are doing work for, you know, very large companies and didn't want to take risks with something they don't know. And, you know, engineers aren't paid to take risks. Engineers are paid to avoid risks. So, that was, an interesting thing. I've always been, you know, in the integration world, presented with a challenge, how good your challenge is from a solution set, cost set, delivery set, meeting the customer needs, that's when you get the work. Well, with selling a product, it's a whole different thing. So you really had to, build up that trust and credibility. And that was a little bit of a challenge. Took longer than we thought.
I think it's like everything when you're building in the automation industry, everything does take longer than you think. And you want to build standard and the customers want to build custom products, right? And so tell me some about your innovative solutions that you're able to do, because I think you're able to do things quite swiftly and quite creatively.
Yeah, that's a great thing. And there's two elements in there. There's speed and there's the ability to customize. And both of those things work hand in hand. With the solution that we developed, we had that in mind. We knew that people wanted at least configurable solutions, potentially customized solutions, because that's just the nature of the world. You know, people aren't designing their systems around conveyors. They are designing their systems around the application, and the conveyors need to fit in, right? So we did a couple things there. Number one, we automated the design process. You know, a lot of times when a conveyor manufacturer gets an order, it then goes into engineering, and then engineering does their thing with it. Then they release it to the shop, and the shop does their thing, then they ship it. So basically, we've created software internally that allows us to cut out the engineering process. So when we say fast, not just because we run faster or we work harder, I mean, maybe we do, but but the reality is we've cut out steps of the process. So we can go right from sales directly to the shop. So we've cut out that step. And actually, that the tool that we use, we also have a customer version of that. It's called Impact. And we can give customers that. And that is a modeling, an application, and a pricing tool. So everybody calls these things configurators, but our configurator is completely different than any other configurator on the market. And it takes a little while to get it. But if you think about the best configurators in the conveyor market, they're cloud-based. You go online. You fill out a really nice wizard. It creates basically specifications. It creates a quote. It creates a price. It creates a model. You download the model. You put it in your assembly. Everything's good. And there's zero wrong with that process. It works. The problem is when you change it, right? When you insert, quote unquote, a dumb model into a master assembly, you know, you're setting it up in SolidWorks. You're attaching mates and references. And then if something has to change, sometimes the model blows up. And by the way, that model, it's a dumb model. So you can't really easily change that. And by the way, if you do, it's a new part number, it's a new price, maybe a new lead time. So ours is basically a native SolidWorks model that has all of that intelligence, the pricing, the part number, how it applies, built into the model. So we have a nifty interface with Excel. You configure it in either SolidWorks or Excel. They talk to each other. You always have a current BOM and then a current price, and you can always check your application. So it's a native live dynamic model.
So I'm an applications engineer. I create a system for a client opportunity, and then I find out that I need station number 7 expanded. So now I have to expand it. So it's an easy peasy mix, right?
Yeah, you're exactly right, and you bring up an important distinction, because for an applications engineer, they use it differently than a design engineer, right? So what I describe kind of works for both. It really does. An applications engineer, the beauty is the speed. They don't have to send it back to us. They don't have to necessarily go back online. They can do everything they need to do really, really quickly to get it close, right? So they can get their proposal out the door with an accurate price. And the design engineer, well, same thing. They can model it around. We give dead accurate models with complete part numbers. So their BOM is now correct. They already know the price. So you don't have to, while you're designing things, go back and forth with the sales engineer. I mean, you can if you want. We're here to support that. But basically, you know, we give them the power and the tools to do it in their environment they're already comfortable with. So if you know SolidWorks and Excel, you know how to use Impact, right? You got to set it up, but it's very simple.
And it's all about reducing the risk, right? So everyone knows that you can, as an apps guy, you can take that, send that up to your purchasing department or design department, and there's low risk in the model. I love that. I think it's very, very clever. So I'd like to switch the conversation a little bit to kind of some of the things that you're seeing. Are you seeing some bigger jobs or smaller jobs? I know speed to market and some of the other trends you might be seeing.
Yeah, great topic. I think, you know, the Amazon effect has really infiltrated our entire industry. Everybody wants everything immediately. You know, everything from support to questions to chats to answers to delivery. So it seems like the industry is extremely busy. It seems like they want faster and faster deliveries. And in general, I feel like the industry is dramatically expanding on many, many fronts. So, you know, you see some technologies in the industry that are, you know, dying a slow death, and you see other ones that are just coming out of nowhere.
But that affects everyone, like that Amazon effect. So it's affecting your end customer, your integrator, and yourself. So you're seeing that as a big thing that is not likely to change.
I think so. I think it's a mentality. Right? It's just everything has sped up in our world. Everything is immediate.
So things are rolling along and you're selling a lot of these systems to integrators, and then you do something very unusual in the marketplace and you make GlideLine an employee-owned company. So why did you do that? And tell me a little bit about that.
Well, there's a lot of answers to that question. There's a lot of questions around that answer. I think that overall, I've been very lucky in my career. And you know, I got to the point where I said, all right, what do I want to do with the rest of my life, the rest of my career? Am I happy where things are, or do we want to shoot for the moon? And a huge part of me wanted to be happy with where I was, because I want for nothing. I have everything that I need. I'm very, very blessed with luck, frankly, right? So, you know, we're in this good situation as a family and as a company. But, you know, there's an old adage that says, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. If you're not getting bigger, you're getting smaller. And you know, frankly, the best people on your team really want to be challenged. And our purpose as a company, and basically the end of the story is, as I discovered what I wanted to do, I somewhat discovered myself to kind of figure out what really speaks to me. And it's really what is the most fulfilling. And I came to the conclusion that I wanted to create an inspiring and positive experience for both our employees and our customers. And we had the ability to do that. We had a model that works. We've done this a few times. We've proven this. We've created this this model of a company that basically allows us to get to the next level, right? So, however, comma, in order to do that, you know, it's not for the meek of heart, right? This is not an easy thing. We've publicly stated that we want to take our company to $100 million. We're a little bit over 30 now, right? So that's a pretty tall order. And by the way, there's a huge glass ceiling somewhere in the, you know, somewhere in the $20 to $30 million range when a company grows from, you know, adolescent to mature or turns into a real company that wasn't just, you know, a small company operating like a small company, one that can actually scale. So I basically knew that the only way to do this was to give everybody a stake in the outcome. And it was a perfect parallel to what I have found most fulfilling, was to create this positive, inspiring experience, right? So to do this, it's going to be hard. You need everybody on board. And by the way, it fulfills the passion and the purpose of who I thought I had become along the way, or figured out who I had become along the way. So sorry for such a long answer.
No, that's a great answer, Kevin. What I saw the news release on YouTube and was very excited for you. But I was wondering, what were the reactions from staff? I mean, I saw some very happy people crying. So were there any reactions that surprised you?
No, I don't think there were reactions that really surprised me. I think, you know, I think like anything else, you have some people who get it and really were like, all right, this is awesome. You have some people that, yeah, okay, this is some type of, you know, who knows what this is. We'll see. And then the rest of them, you know, maybe they're somewhere in the middle with, you know, like, well, this seems pretty good, but I don't really understand it. And I think that was the overwhelming feeling. I think if you, you know, everybody's heard of employee-owned companies, but nobody really knows, I shouldn't say nobody, but not many people know how they really work, right? The mechanism behind it, the opportunity, the upside. I mean, it's an incredible opportunity to be part of an employee-owned company, because you are now, you have a, it of course depends on the way the culture is set up and the overall, the rest of the company is set up. But if it's done right, and you know, I hope we're on the way of doing it right. If it is done right, you can feel like you are an owner. I mean, ownership thinking is a very powerful thing, not only for the success of the company, but also for the success of the employee. So rather than just going to work every day and doing a job, if you feel like you're doing something that you're engaged in and have a sense of fulfillment, that's a significantly better place to be in life. So that's obviously a huge part of it.
No, I think it's wonderful. And, you know, like you say, you've kind of got the culture all set, and you've now got ownership thinking. And these are people who are like, ooh, don't waste that money, or, oh, let's get this job shipped right away because we're going to get paid faster. Like, you do have some of those things that are that you wouldn't have in a normal corporation. Is there any surprises that you've seen now in the change of culture with now people knowing that they own a piece of this?
I think it's just the power of the team. You know, it's one thing to say it theoretically, but then to see it in actual action. You know, I think before it was an employee-owned company, and as a much smaller company, I felt like I was, you know, one carrying a lot of the load and not just doing the work, because, you know, the company's always done all of the work, right? Yes. But I mean, carrying the burden, right? The worry, the stress, and the seek to improve, right? Part of that's because I had visibility, and part of it was the position, but, you know, really it's the overall responsibility and what to, you know, what could happen both on the negative or the positive side. So now that everybody has exposure, we've also turned into an open book managed company, right? So we've given full transparency into the dollars and cents. So coupled with that tool to help understand how and when we make money and an actual stake in the outcome, both long and short term, it's incredibly powerful to get basically everybody rowing in the same direction. And I don't mean to make it sound like it's complete utopia, right? We still have plenty of problems. We still have plenty of challenges, and you know, not everybody is exactly rowing in the right direction. But you know, I think in any company, if you look at, if there's 100 people, pick a number, 10 or 20 of them are going to work like it's their own company, no matter what, no matter where they are. That's just who they are. They were raised that way. That's who they are. You're going to have maybe 5 or 10 people that kind of doesn't matter what you do on the bottom side, they're coming to work, right? Yeah. So it's the people in the middle that you're trying to affect. And, you know, that could be 70 or 80% of the company. So if 70, 80% of your company is even one click better than it was before, that's 70 or 80% of your company, right? So that's a huge number.
Yep.
And if it's 2 clicks, 3 clicks, it can have a tremendous impact. And that's been the biggest surprise. It's just really just the power of that along the way. Incredible.
Do you now that you've been an employee-owned company, I think maybe for 2 or 3 years?
2017, so 4 years.
Okay, wow.
Cinco de Mayo.
So are you seeing as well, being employee-owned, that is a really good thing for employee attraction and retention?
I think so. I think it's a piece of it. It's interesting, and there's a great upside from a financial perspective. I think it's the effect that being employee owned can have on a company is the actual attraction, right? It's one thing to be employee owned. It's another thing to have a company of people who think and act like owners and care and, you know, follow the values that the company has. And, you know, it's that alignment that is the powerful thing.
That's great. Kevin, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast. I know you and I've been chatting about getting you on for a long time, and I know how busy you are. Yeah. How can people get a hold of you, and how can they find out more about GlideLine product?
GlideLine is, we have a website. It's probably the best place, www.glide-line.com.
Thanks again. Our sponsor for this episode is Earhart Automation Systems. Earhart builds and commissions turnkey solutions for their worldwide automation clients. With over 80 years of precision manufacturing, they understand the complex world of robotics, automated manufacturing, and project management, delivering world-class custom automation on time and on budget. Contact one of their sales engineers to see what Earhart can build for you. That's info@earhartautomation.com. And Earhart is spelled EHRHART. I'd like to thank and acknowledge our partner, A3, the Association for Advancing Automation. A3 is the umbrella association for the RIA, AIA, MCMA, and A3 Mexico. These four associations combined represent almost 1,300 automation manufacturers, component suppliers, systems integrators, end users, research groups, and consulting firms throughout the world that are driving automation forward. I'd like to thank and recognize our partner, Painted Robot. Painted Robot builds and integrates digital solutions. They're a web development firm that offers SEO and digital social marketing and can set up and connect CRM and other ERP tools to unify marketing, sales, and operations. And if you'd like to get in touch with us at the Robot Industry Podcast, you can find me, Jim Beretta, on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Be safe out there. Today's podcast was produced by Customer Attraction Industrial Marketing. And I'd like to thank my nephew, Chris Gray, for the music, Chris Colvin for audio, Production, my partner Janet, and our partners A3 Painted Robot, and our sponsor Earhart Automation Systems.